Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Eamon Ryan, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Brendan.
So you're no longer leader of the Green Party. You are still Minister for Environment, Climate, Communications and Transport, but you will be retiring from politics after the next election. And I think one of the reasons you're retiring from politics is to spend more time with your family and maybe especially your son, Tommy. How old is Tommy now?
Tommy is 23. It's one of the reasons, a variety of different reasons. I'm still going to work on climate and nature, and but I'll do it in a different way. And for me, it's the right thing to do. It's to spend time with Tommy and be part of the caring role there more so, but it's also because it's right for me to do. I wouldn't like kind of put that as the reason why I'm doing it.
Yeah, one of them. Yeah. Would you tell me a bit about Tommy? Tommy was a typical kid up to the age of 4, 5, and what happened?
Tommy's
then?
One of, we have 4 children, myself and Victoria. People might know my wife, Victoria White. She's written a lot about this, and she was a columnist in the Irish Examiner and the Herald. And we have four lovely children, 4 in very quick succession, 3.5 years. And Tommy was a twin. Himself and Ino, his brother, were born very healthy and very happy. And for the first 3.5, 4 years, no real sense of any, you know, Tommy met all his markers, met all his kind of tests and so on. But at about the age of 4, it kind of disintegrated, and it was really scary, particularly for my wife. It was just at the time, actually, that I became a minister first in 2007. And so it was a really challenging time for him more than anyone else. We've since found out, it was very hard to find out, what was it? What happened?
Can you describe the disintegration as far as you want to?
I don't have any problem. He literally went from being, as I said, a very happy, attentive sort of child, you know, normal focus, and to being deeply distressed, not able to cope. He's just starting in school in Nenagh, but just completely unable, tantrums, distraught. He had subsequently, I think it's called childhood disintegrative disorder. It's about 1 in 100,000 children that typically develop it. It's a late onset autism, probably genetic. We're only really learning about autism in various, there's so many different kind of forms or expressions of it. It brings with it an intellectual disability. So, which has, I suppose, and Tommy, when he was young, 4, 5, 6, would have been kind of, as I said, quite attentive, but increasingly became more inward, maybe to put that word in it, but went through a very difficult period. We went into the health system looking for help.
Before we get to that, can I ask you, it must have been extremely distressing, A, for Tommy, who's doesn't comprehend what's going on at all,
and his siblings.
Yeah.
So you've lost your brother in and not lost, but you know what I mean? What's happening to your brother? And for particularly my wife, as I said, because she was the main person coping. I was very busy as minister at the time, but for all of us.
And like, you don't know what's happening here.
Not the first faintest idea. No. And no real kind of reason for it. We had a house fire. We thought it was post-traumatic stress after that. We thought that, you know, maybe had triggered something. So, and we went into the health services, as I said. Not a lot of parents now with children with autism will know what I'm talking about here. Real difficulty getting a diagnosis, real lack of, I mean, in a sense, kind of our health system is not geared. I mean, autism is a reasonably recent understanding of it. I think maybe a lot of our systems haven't caught up yet in terms of they're mixing kind of, you know, I mean, our original experience, first of all, what have you done? You know, is this something environmental? Like, did something happen at home which brought this on? And it was.
This is from a doctor or a psychiatrist?
Yeah, psychiatrist. Yeah, it was very outdated and very completely ineffective. We had to go for private. And again, most parents with autism will be very familiar with this. We ended up, because the system wasn't really providing a diagnosis for us, we went to get a private diagnosis, which did immediately, fairly instantaneously, your child is on the spectrum, your child has an intellectual disability. And maybe it was difficult for us because of that late onset characteristic of our case, but a lot of parents with autism would be very familiar with
so
that.
So how long did it take? How long were you dealing with the public system before you got...
We still are.
Yeah, but I mean before you started getting anywhere.
Would it
before
be three, you 3 years?
3 years to get a diagnosis.
Pretty much, 2 to 3 years, yeah.
And that time is ticking away as well, all the time for intervention. That must have made you very angry, did it? Because look, we know that it's awful for every family waiting years for a diagnosis, services, everything. You're living it and you were in government at this time as well. I mean, were you coming in every day railing at your colleagues, at fellow ministers?
Yeah, my colleagues will know I do speak in cabinet and I do. I mean, you have to share your experiences to inform your kind of input. So, yes, I do. I've spoke about it in the Dáil as well. Actually, I've spoke quite a bit in the Dáil about it. And one of the things I said in a Dáil speech, we had a debate on it once, we have to be slightly careful here in terms, like our system is not serving autistic children and young adults. That's absolutely clear. You can look at the newspaper headlines today. There are 160 children out there who do not have a school place. Even 21 years, 23 years after the County Synod case, we're still not serving in that way. The system is not serving in terms... Like, we haven't had a day's respite in 5 years, you know, since he was 18. And that's not serving our parents or the families or our children. It's more than anything else... Not serving, as I said, in that the way the health service actually approaches it. There is a fundamental flaw. Our CAMHS system, Children and Young Adolescent Mental Health Services, does not know how to deal with autism, does not serve us well in terms of being able to provide those services. So I can go down through and critique and would be able to share with listening from a lot of other parents. But you have to be careful because there is also in this state, I believe we are a caring country. Our instinct is to support disability and not to and integrate it and so on. So while our experience has been terrible, like a lot of parents, there's also you also have to stand up for, like Tommy was in a school, Satanta, for 6 years in the Slogan Road. Now, the buildings were ramshackle. The resources were threadbare. But my God, it was brilliant. The teachers he had, the headmaster, the ethos was just fantastic. And like we're
and
still
he was very, very lucky to have that.
He was.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The fact that, as you say, parents still going to the High Court in this day and age to get a school place.
Yeah.
When you say we're a very caring country, you see, that could feel like a cop out of the political system as well. Because would you agree that a lot of it gets pushed back on the parents, doesn't it? They practically have to learn to become physios, doctors, speech therapists. A lot of it is like, oh, we will give you the tools here because you're not getting any services.
Yeah, quoting my wife once, so one of the, we need a whole range of different services. We do, we need change in our mental health services. We need integration, community care. But also we have to be careful, like what we're missing a lot now, it seems to me, is often congregated settings, which we've kind of moved away from. And I always remember my wife saying once, she had a line, she said, they say we're moving to care and community. They mean me.
Yeah.
You know, that's it's on the parents' shoulders. So you're right. When I say we are a caring country, every country has had difficulty, particularly with autism, because there's only a more recent understanding. Like a lot of other countries, European countries, they still don't really have, they're only coming to terms with it in terms of diagnosis. So I believe Irish people are caring. And actually, when it comes to the integration of disability and the, you know, kind of living with disabilities are in a variety of different ways, we actually have the right instinct and ethos. We're not serving
people,
that.
Yeah, people are very good. But again, you go back to, like, I think of so many people I know traumatised by a birth, maybe, traumatised by a diagnosis. Mm. I'm sure, like, when that started happening to Tommy, probably the worst point in your lives, in a way.
Oh, yeah.
I think
that
most people are at the worst point in their lives. You feel that the state should come in and just try and hold these people in some way, rather than saying, well, we're a very caring people and the community is great and all that, but that we take these people at the worst point in their lives, as you were and as so many people are, and then we make it harder for them.
Agreed. No, we need to do, we need to, I think particularly, I think there's widespread recognition, our health system is not serving children with intellectual, particularly autism and intellectual disabilities, particularly with suffering maybe with the same distress, mental health and other issues that come our way. It needs to fundamentally improve and change. That will happen when you, in some ways, when we recognise we can be good at this. Like, it is important to recognise. The reason I mentioned that about the services that are there, that if you don't, in a sense, recognise that we can do it, sometimes maybe it's harder then to get the confidence to put the money and the resources and get people working in the area so that it does actually work. It does take off. So that's one of the reasons I mentioned that. One other thing as well, Brendan, as well, you're right in terms of, you know, the hardest, worst, most difficult, challenging moment in life. But also, I think we have to be slightly careful. It also is, in some ways, Tommy is as rewarding and as important, as pleasant, brilliant as giving to us as any of our four children.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a, it's not a kind of a sentence of, oh, you've got a life sentence for it's now one. It's
no, it can feel like that initially.
It can feel, but like it's a life sentence. Like, one of the best things about it is we will be parenting for life.
Yeah.
One of the hardest things, we'll be parenting for life. You know, it has flip sides to it. And therefore, you just have to be slightly careful. And also sometimes slightly careful, you know, oh, if only the state came in early and the early intervention and this would all be sorted. The truth is, in some conditions, it's not going to go away. You know what I mean? It's not. No, I mean, yes, you need all sorts of intervention. Yes, you need all sorts.
Hang on, no, though. I mean, look. Look, I'm not going to question your own experience and lived experience and all that, but hang on. There's no doubt that there is a clock ticking on every child with a disability with autism, that there is a moment of opportunity there, and that the state is missing that moment of opportunity. The services are missing those moments of opportunity to get in there and start working on it.
Absolutely. No, listen, the more the absence, the lack of intervention is part of the real problem. Absolutely, we need that. But not to just give this kind of slight false hope maybe to parents. So if only you got that early intervention, then you would have a child that would end up being able to do the Leaving Cert and go on and do this, that and the other, whatever. There are some conditions, a lot of conditions, where actually, yes, you need that early intervention, but not like it's plain sailing from there. We do need to be slightly honest and kind of realistic about things.
Yeah, okay. When you say about the no respite in the last 6 years, and I know you're deferring to Victoria as the one who has been more at the front line of this, because you were, is it basically, and again, not to make Tommy out to be a burden, is it a full-time job?
It is full-time job. Our Tommy, now the language, you'll know maybe about this, others would, like, the language is kind of strange in it. Like, you hear the word moderate. Our Tommy would be on the moderate. Moderate is not moderate in the everyday understanding of that word. Like, it's significant.
Yeah.
And that means...
I have a mild and it doesn't cover the half of it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, mild is not mild.
Yeah.
Like, all the language, you think, God, geez, you could ramp up the meaning there of the words a fair bit. But in our case, our Tommy would be described as moderate in terms... And that, for any parent who knows in the circumstances, means... It's not like we can go leave home and, you know, we'll be with Tommy all the time, have to be. And now that brings great joy. And like for me, and it is Victoria does the heavy burden here, partly because of my work, but also maybe she's been very attentive and very brilliant at it. But for me, it's also a good part of my life. Like, I go out for a walk with Tommy, or I go out for a cycle. I'm very lucky. Tommy can walk and cycle and swim. So I'll head out. And that's a brilliant part of my day. That's his company for me is really rewarding. So it is really good.
So you and he are very close, are you?
I think we're all close. Yeah, I think there's a lot of love that comes, like with all your children. Like and it's an infinite love. Like, love for one doesn't diminish the love for the other.
Yeah.
But it is, so it is. So I'm just making that point. Yes, we need pretty much to be full time there, and part of that is actually full time brilliant, but it also is full time difficult because you never get a break. Yeah, that is true.
And how is Tommy getting on now? Does he have a good quality of life? Is he happy?
He went through difficult... I have to be careful here. I don't want to go into too much.
Yeah, okay.
You know, personal circumstances.
Yeah.
But he went through his own challenge. Like a lot of kids, we're involved. Victoria, along with another woman, Helen Norris, one of the best things we did, she did, we brought Tommy to an organisation up in the north side, Snowflakes, which was parents of children with autism organising themselves, because maybe because the state wasn't there, and definitely because the state wasn't there, organising activities and so on. They brought that south side and they set up an organisation called Open Spectrum. And it's a really brilliant organisation, which I'm involved in. I go out next week and I'll be doing athletics with Tommy and six other parents and six other boys and girls. And that was an organisation where we organise activities. So, you know, could be youth club, rock climbing, whatever it is, for children with young adults and children with autism. And the best thing about that was, A, you're getting out and brilliant social activities and great for the kids, but also for parents to meet each other and share best practice. Like that school, Satanta, that told you about, no one in the state told us about it. It was up the road and it's a specialist sort of school. We knew nothing about it until another parent in Open Spectrum said, oh, listen, have you heard of Satanta? And we ended up going to Satanta. And similarly, there was another parent there whose child was in Giel, and parents with autism will know this. And we were just really lucky. We got a place in Giel, close to where we live.
What is it?
Giel is a daycare centre for young adults or adults. It goes like, you know, you can go be there for a long time.
Yeah. But this is another issue, isn't it? That when people hit 18 and come out of the school system that they might have been lucky enough to be in.
That's a cliff edge. That's a real cliff edge.
Yeah.
Cliff edge. The problem for parents, in my experience, and listening to other parents in Open Spectrum, is it's at that early diagnosis stage. It's getting the respite and getting the hours, as you say, all the kind of learning and so on.
Which you never got.
No, not to anywhere near the extent we should have.
So getting it or not getting it is probably a better way we'd phrase that.
Yeah, and then the next period of real uncertainty is when you get out of the education system and into, and sorry, the worst of all is getting access to the child mental health services. We do need a new CAMHS autism. And ostensibly the system says that it is there, but in lived experience, it's not. And that probably, those are they're the gaps we need to fill, in my experience.
So Tommy is a young adult now, and you've talked about that he will be parents forever. Do you worry about his future? Will he live independently?
Yeah,
that's
why I go back to said we've moved away from congregation settings because that was, you know, all in the past. All was wrong in our country, was all congregations and whatever. But we haven't necessarily replaced it. And we will have to look at that because the reality is at some point we can't functionally parent. So we'll have to have some sort of backstop. One of the places we looked, myself and Victoria just went round, we're looking at different places. One of the things that inspired me, I loved the Camp Hill model. Just from visiting, I don't know if you ever Ballytobin down in Kilkenny or there was a Camp Hill community we went to in Camp Hill would be connected to kind of the Steiner movement, but there was Camp Hill Centre down in Ballymoney in Wexford, and we went Wexford, and we went down there, and I just got a sense what was really attractive about it. There was the sense of the special. You know, it wasn't just a burden. It was the sense of everyone brings something and gives something. So in the community there, that adult in this case would be part of a community where it's a positive thing, not a kind of burden that's passed on, as it were. And we'd be looking for something like that, which has that sense of love in it at its core.
And look, wouldn't we all? And that's the ideal model. But I mean, knowing what we know now about what went on in these settings and these institutions in Ireland, could you in all conscience put your son into an institution in this country?
Well, look, if we're not going to be parenting, there's going to have to be some location where, you know, someone can live. And yes, we need to learn and address all the sins of the past, but not to allow that to stop creating new communities and new.
A lot of the people who oversaw the sins of the past are still the organisations that are currently running a lot of those services and settings, aren't they?
True. But not everyone involved in care and in communities like that were engaged in the sins of the past. You know, so we do have to be slightly careful that we don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, maybe put it that way.
Do you worry about after you die?
No, I think I think we have to prepare for that, and we are. We're, I suppose, conscious that we don't put too much onto Tommy's siblings, so they don't have to manage it all. But the state will have to step up. Like, the state is, through whatever different organisations that we can, that it can work with, the state does have a responsibility there. And the state will, in the coming decades, have to improve. And that can and will happen.
What do you hope for Tommy? What would you want for him in his life?
Well, that he's comfortable, that he is... he's healthy, mentally healthy as well as physically healthy. And as I said, that is the case. We, you know, Tommy has a lot of challenges, but he also, he can live and does live a very fulfilling life in his way. And it's to make sure that like, I don't think it's different with the other children. Like, parent, I don't know what you're saying, Brendan. You never stop parenting. Mm. And it doesn't matter. Like, it's the same with the child with disabilities or not disabilities. You're kind of, there's worry doesn't leave you at any stage.
Oh, sure. Look, God knows what the rest of them could end up doing or getting up to. Yeah. Your wife, Victoria, wrote once, and it was a hard thing to read, actually, that she can't help but feel that the old Tom is somewhere there behind the mist, which is such, it must be such a hard thing to feel that sometimes. Like, do you mourn who he was, and do you think about this other Tommy that could have been?
It is funny. She wrote one of those articles. We did. I loved taking videos of my kids when they were younger. And so we happened to have a lot of video footage of the four of them. I mean, they're so entertaining for me, of watching them, you know, everyday stuff, you know, just hanging out at home. And it is very tragic to see, you know, in particular just the condition that Tommy has, because it was late onset.
Yeah.
That flip. But I don't think I don't have that. I don't have that sense of, you know, oh, one day maybe he'll flip back, or because I don't think that's medically going to happen, and therefore I know I personally don't. I tend to live with Tom as he is.
Tommy is who Tommy is. Yeah. Did it change you?
I think marriage and being a parent changes you.
Yeah.
I think you don't have much choice, Brennan. You don't have. It's not a. It's kind of. It's the hand you're dealt, and there's no real sense of, oh, I wish it could be another way. I don't think that. No, I don't have a sense of, I think it was one of the tests you get in life, but you get loads of different tests in life. It's probably the most profound in our case, but it's not a burden. It is a burden in many ways. Like, yeah, there's so many different ways. But if you depict it just as that, oh, poor me, you know, it is what it is. And Tommy brings so much, as well as, we have responsibilities in terms of helping, looking after. So just as his siblings do too. And I think I see it in that way. I think it's just part of our lives. Yeah. And it's part of lives that is wonderful, just as his siblings are wonderful. It's just different. And it does bring certain responsibilities. But it, as I said, it brings a lot of love and a lot of connection that is in some ways very rewarding. Yeah. I know. Without sound like it's tough.
No. But I know.
But if you depict it just as, oh, poor you.
Yeah.
Well, it's not honest and true to all the love that does come with it.
Yeah.
And so it's a mix. And
yeah.
Like so many.
And
things
not to romanticize things. Do you think it's made you a more loving, closer family in a way?
Well, I'd be very careful.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I think it. Yeah. I think it does. I think that's one of the things it brings. I think it does.
As a politician, were you able to do anything for people like Tommy, for families like yours? Like, you were in this unique situation in government minister twice. You had a voice, you had power.
I think I can and did and have tried to, not to in any way that you could be satisfied. I think one of the interesting things, my sense, I just take this government. Simon Harris has knowledge about this subject too. Now, a different circumstance, every family is different, but it's not as if he did, like, he actually would have been involved. One of the reasons he got involved in politics at the very start is he set up a parents group similar to the one that we set up in Open Spectrum. He was involved in something similar in Greystones. I would say the Taoiseach Emile Martin is similarly he similarly had a lot of experience, actually, very much in this area. And when particularly me, and we tend to speak about our local in this, because so Micheál would talk to more about Cork, maybe because he's very aware of what's happening in Cork and not happening in Cork. And my God, it's not happening in Cork. And and there are a number of other colleagues in government. Irish politics is not segregated from society or separate from it. We do have lived experience of the day-to-day challenges. And I think there's a widespread understanding in government and in opposition that the services are not satisfactory and need to change. So in a sense, I would be contributing to that debate, not kind of trying to bend my colleagues around my way of thinking, but trying to add our experience to inform what needs to happen. And a lot more needs to happen immediately.
We're getting a lot of texts from families detailing their personal situations, right? And I'm told that it's clear that a lot of these people are at or beyond breaking point and worried for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really challenging. It's very hard. Come back to what I mean, when I'm saying there, but when you ask me the question, you know, is it all a burden or is it, it can be, I mean, it is heartbreaking in terms of the circumstances, and particularly where the state is failing you, particularly when you get a letter, as I've seen recently, from the health service saying, sorry, we don't deal with that. That's not our job, which is not true. So the anger that is out there is absolutely palpable and correct and justified. And we do have a responsibility in government, in every sector, to in health, in transport, in education, there's so many different, this crosses so many different areas, to answer to that. Because, come back to what I said at the very start, I think the Irish people in our core culture want that. There isn't a sense that sometimes exists in other countries that you can put this to one side or look, turn the other way. I don't think Irish people want to do that.
Yeah, but I suppose people would be thinking it's a pity then that wasn't reflected more in what the government does. Do you feel the state has given Tommy the rights and the dignity that he is entitled to as a citizen of this country?
In many ways, yes, and in other ways, shockingly, no. I would cite those examples. The fact that our Tommy can, every morning a bus came to pick him up and bring him to school, and that school was superb, or that we were, and maybe we were just lucky.
And that was a lotto. You were lucky there. Yeah. You couldn't.
That every day he can walk now to his daycare centre. And in the absence of that, what would we do? And I absolutely understand for those parents who haven't got the allocation to that place. And ours was done just as everywhere else. It tends to be. What's shockingly bad about it as well is the lack of clarity and information is the real failing of the state, as well as services and so on. But it's the uncertainty, the fact that you're left in limbo land is often the hardest. But in that way, we have been served. We were not served in the way our Tommy was diagnosed, the absence of mental health, psychiatric and other supports. A lot of parents would absolutely have the same experience, that's not there.
Were you like those people who said there that they're close to the edge? Were there times you were close to the edge in the early days?
No, I think there were times. Victoria wrote about this, or we spoke about it on Rage, I think, as one. There were a couple of occasions where it was really challenging, like where when I said he broke down, I mean, it was very public, distraught, utter chaos. And those were very traumatic occasions for us.
Okay, look, thanks for talking about that so eloquently, and people will have lots of thoughts on that. What kind of shape do you think you're leaving the Green Party in? It always strikes me that so many young people especially are so exercised about the environment, right? You would think that the Greens should be this big national movement. And there you are, dismal performance in the European and local elections. You've no MEP now. You've lost half your council seats, kind of languishing around the 4% in polls or whatever. What went wrong there with the Green Party as a movement?
Never easy being government. And across Europe, not just in Ireland, the tide of environmental thinking comes in, it comes out. It's been out for the last few years because of COVID, variety of reasons. But we in government and our party is in an incredibly strong, healthy, vibrant position because we are actually effecting real change. Change often that's not popular. Change is not easy to deliver, but change for the better for the people of our country. So we are in a very strong, healthy, vibrant position.
Why don't you have more support?
It's difficult, partly because I think when you are changing things, it is difficult. We're also very much demonised. I think a lot of people would kind of see us as a political foil to oppose against and to be depicted in a way that is difficult to counter.
Why is it difficult to counter?
Because when you stop beating
your wife, it's not a hard
question.
Do you not have a good argument for people?
Oh, we do. We absolutely do. Because I think actually what's happening in this time of government particularly is there's a transformation occurring. Like the last 4 years has been transformative in the delivery of green transformation in this country, in improving care in terms of the likes of what Roderick's doing in childcare, in improving culture, the likes of what Catherine's done, basic income for arts, funding of the arts and so on.
Failing to meet our climate targets, emissions reductions way off. Net zero by 2050 is a fantasy at this stage.
Brendan,
1 million EVs on the road by 2030.
No. That's not true. Our emissions reduced last year by 6.8%. The scientists down in Mara and Cork this week said they were really surprised, but actually we are on track towards meeting our first carbon budget. Now, it's not certain we'll deliver it because it's so difficult, so challenging, and we have to do so much more.
Yeah.
But there's been a transformation in the country.
Are we not on track to miss the 2025 carbon budget by between 17 and 27%?
Our emissions went down 6.8% last year. Our public transport numbers are going up through the roof. Irish people are turning to rural bus services and to the new bus services and rail services we're putting in a way that is transformative and to the benefit of this country. We are probably the leading country in Europe in the retrofitting of our buildings, which is one of the best ways of tackling social
retrofitting,
justice.
Retrofitting, were we to have 500,000 done by the end of last year and we've done 80,000?
We are doing 50,000 houses a year.
We're way off target on that as well.
No, we're not. Yeah. We're on target. And we're actually, I was over in the UK during the week meeting Ed Miliband, the UK minister. More than anything else he wanted to know is, how are you doing so well in the retrofitting? What could we learn from you could apply there?
Hang on, if I got the wrong figure, so that we hit 80K by the end of last year instead of the planned 500K.
We did 50,000 houses last year.
Okay.
We're putting, every day, 100 Irish houses are putting solar panels up the roof. Every week, 1,000 houses have been retrofitted. It is working.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
Working in a way because the Greens were in government. Now, yes, that's not easy because you have to do difficult things to get the money to make that happen. But it is happening. We are delivering.
Just before you go, there's a story in the Irish Times today about your successor as Green leader, Minister Roderick O'Gorman, about his department blocking FOIs from the Irish Times. And these are FOIs about the recent referendums. So did Roderick O'Gorman in that campaign mislead the public about the advice he got on the tax implications and the implications for immigration law around that referendum? And are he and his department now being evasive about admitting this?
No. Firstly, the minister doesn't have a role in how freedom of information requests are processed, and they do need to speed up in that department. The numbers of requests have doubled in the last year, and huge voluminous work.
Did he mislead people about the advice he was given?
That referendum, now listen, the people decided, and we obviously accept the votes of the people in that, and we learn lessons in terms of come back if you're in any future referendums, learn whatever lessons. But the fundamental core of that referendum, from my perspective, just going back to what we were talking about earlier.
Never mind the fundamental core, just not to be rude. No, he claimed that the proposals would have no legal impact on immigration law. But it turns out that justice officials warned the referendums risk creating prolonged legal uncertainty over migration. He also claimed that the family referendum had no tax implications. It turns out revenue officials warned of potential tax law changes. Pascal Donoghue warned Mr. O'Gorman of extensive policy and expenditure risks in the care referendum.
He, in my mind, Roderick, in the most incredibly difficult role in the last 4 years, having to deal with so many different complex, huge issues of consequence, has been a superb minister and has entered in every area in a really clear, honest way to try and deliver for the Irish people. The core motive behind that referendum, going back to our discussion earlier on, was to recognise caring roles in families in our society and try to recognise all the variety.
That's just what you do in a referendum, that you're economical maybe with the advice you've been given to get people to do the right thing?
There was no economical with the advice. And the freedom of information request will be processed. It wasn't done in a timely manner. That should have happened. So we absolutely accept that. But I believe what Roderick did in that referendum and in the other work he's done right throughout his roles has shown the highest best public ethic and standard. And he will continue to do that now as leader of our party.
OK, Eamon Ryan, thank you very much.